Hello, and welcome to Text Talks. I'm Sharon Ferris at CEREC, the Canadian Education and Research Institute for Counseling. Thanks for joining me for this series of discussions with authors of CEREC's new Career Development Practice in Canada textbook. We're happy to bring you insights from these thought leaders in the career development field in Canada. Today, we're speaking with Phil Jarvis. Phil is the Director of Global Partnerships at Career Cruising, which provides career exploration and planning resources to over 20,000 schools, libraries, and employment centers. As the author of Choices in the late 1970s, Phil was an early pioneer of computer-based career exploration and planning. He also co-authored Blueprint for Life Work Designs and co-created the Real Game series. His programs have helped millions of students transition from school to success. Phil's chapter in the Career Development Practice in Canada textbook explores how career development is key to economic development. Hi, Phil. It's terrific to have you with us.
It's great to be with you, Sharon.
So, diving into your chapter in the text, I think what strikes me most is its timeliness. The issue of workforce skills gaps, which you write about, is dominating the headlines. Just in the last few weeks, there have been articles such as "Stop Blaming Youth for Being Unemployed," "Unreliable Jobs Data Cloud Labor Picture," and "Developing Skills, Where Are Canada's Employers?" So, Phil, my first question for you is, why do our current processes to connect people with jobs and meaningful careers remain so inefficient?
Well, I think it's largely because we really don't have terrific processes and haven't traditionally. The education system is the track that all youth will go through to get from youth to adulthood. And students can, in fact, go through the entire education system and get gold stars and get good marks and come out the other end with no clue what they're going to do next. Now that's a cynical scenario, but as we speak, you know that there will be many parents across Canada who know that their students have done well, but whether they've just completed high school or just completed university and they're deep in debt, many don't really know what the next step is, and they're not sure how to connect with jobs that will really be good ones for them. And educators don't really think, that the K-12 system is about preparing students for jobs anyway. It's really about preparing them to be well-rounded, engaged, informed, critical thinking, young adults, and above all, to prepare them for university. Now, we know most won't go to university, but most curriculum is still lined up around those university entrance expectations. And that's not surprising because anybody who's in the education system went through university. And in fact, it's the only career in which you actually get to do 16 years of testing the work environment before you decide to spend the rest of your life, with a career in education. So for everyone who's not going to be making their career in education, they're going to be doing a step from one environment, the education system, to an entirely different, chaotic environment when they step out. On the other hand, employers, and there's been this finger-pointing between employers who say you're not preparing young people with the skills, attitudes, experiences, and so on that we need, and employers, educators are pushing back and basically saying we're not preparing robots for you. So we really haven't. Now, there are obviously major exceptions and great good practice going on in various areas of the country, but it's largely because we really aren't making it a priority to prepare young people to transition from school to success immediately.
So you've talked just now about a number of different groups that have an important role to play in connecting people with meaningful careers. So let's break this down, starting with the students. One of the things that you wrote about in the text is how too many students fail to see the relevance of their studies to future work roles. So you're in grade 5 science class or grade 9 history class. What do we need to do to be connecting curriculum to careers for students?
The wisdom, coming out of Harvard's Creating Pathways to Prosperity, out of the Canadians for 21st Century Learning, and so many other initiatives, is that education has to be much more real-world project-based. So whether it's, the grade 9 history or the grade 5 science or the grade 7 math or whatever it is, It's got to be learned in the context of issues that are real for the community that the student's in, if not the village, town, city, the province, and certainly in Canada, in real-world contexts that make sense. Because unfortunately, too many students constantly ask the question, why do I need to learn this? And they don't get an answer that satisfies them. The answer is usually, you need to learn this to get from this grade to the next grade in this, and in the next grade, and so on. And while that may make a lot of sense to the educators, and you know, just go far enough and it'll all become clear to you, that's not a satisfactory answer for an awful lot of students. So it's around the issue of making the learning real, real world, personal, and relevant for students.
So students make their way through high school, and then they are faced with a number of choices as to what comes next, whether that's a post-secondary education or direct entry into the workforce. And in the text, I thought you shared some pretty stark numbers, and in fact, probably to some pretty surprising numbers about that journey. So you write about how 1 in 5 students in Canada drop out before completing high school. You talk about how the majority of students do not pursue post-secondary education at all. And of those who do, 1/3 of students in post-secondary education change programs or drop out by the end of their first year. So what's this telling us about career development, Phil?
Well, it's largely telling us that career development isn't part of the picture for an awful lot of those students, and they can't see the point in staying in school. You know, it gets harder and harder, and unless you've got a better and better reason for digging in and really wanting to become engaged and achieve, you know, the temptation to just quit and move on to something else just get stronger. In the case of and university, obviously it's much more challenging than high school for students. And if they don't see a clear reason, or if they've got a sibling who's 2 or 3 years older, deep in student loan debt, and still unemployed and in their parents' basement, they may be asking themselves, why would I want to follow down the same path and incur a lot of debt with unclear expectations and goals, unless I can really see what the return on the investment is going to be. So, again, it's about helping young people develop an image of the life that they want to be leading beyond school. I really do believe that the whole educational experience should be first and foremost about preparing students to step out of school immediately into success. Really, it's more about preparing them for the next level of education in every case, whether or not they know why they're taking the next rung on the educational ladder, and when they get to the top of the ladder, they know what they're going to do. So, really, the notion of becomes an issue, a big issue in Canada, because of course we have a shrinking youth cohort. We have people, you know, getting married later, having fewer kids. We have the boomers, now about to leave the workforce in a tsunami year after year for the next 16 to 20 years. And really, as a society, we cannot afford to have young people complete education, deep in debt, working at second cup, not being able to pay off their student loans, let alone buy a car, buy a house, start a family, and start paying taxes and become engaged in the economy.
So again, that connection between career development and economic development.
Absolutely.
Now we're talking about
It's not just the economic. I think really at the bottom, it's a connection between young people's dreams and aspirations and the why of the educational pathway that they're on.
So I was going to say we're talking about students, but of course this issue isn't isolated to students. So managing careers is not only a challenge for young people. In your chapter, you talk about how many adults go through their entire working lives without ever making fully intentional career choices. And I think at an individual level, we can all understand that sense of personal dissatisfaction and the negative consequences it could have. But again, turning to the economic picture, how does this play out on a national scale, this lack of career engagement? What are the implications for Canada as a country?
Well, they're enormous. I mean, at every level, from the individual to the family to the community to the whole country. The latest Gallup survey for Canada suggests that just under 30% of people now working as adults at any level and in any sector across Canada are fully engaged, really like what they're doing, and they're really, really bought in and doing the best they can. About half that number are actually disengaged and may actually be sabotaging their employers or certainly not doing what they could do. And the rest are in between, somewhere on automatic pilot, just doing what they've got to do to get through the day. So the consequences of you know, so many people in Canada actually heading home at the end of the day burned out and really not having the energy to engage with their kids or with their family or their community in ways that they might are huge. But the issue of lost productivity and competitiveness for our employers, if we're really going to compete in this world, there's a big concern about slipping productivity in Canada. But if you got less than a third of your population who landed in the jobs that they're in now by fate, happenstance, luck, good luck, bad luck, whoever they met, whatever, but random reasons in most cases, as most adults will tell you, not surprisingly, what they're bringing to their employer and in terms of really making a commitment and being part of a team that's innovating and being as productive as possible, making their employer as competitive as possible is you know, dragging an anchor for those employers. For those who don't find their way and try to take shortcuts, we end up with huge costs in terms of corrections, prisons, social assistance, welfare, other issues. Health is a huge issue, as we know, a huge budget issue, and the number one cause of bad health is stress. And for Canadians, the number one stressor is work, and the number two stressor is finances. And I think you'd agree those two are very closely connected. So if we could reduce a little bit of stress in the country by having a few more people doing work that they love, look forward to going to, have a good day, feel recognized and acknowledged for their contributions, not feeling quite as strong a need to escape with various substances, then I think it's the consequences are huge for the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all want that satisfying and meaningful experience at work, no doubt. I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned earlier about employers, and obviously employers are a critical part of this equation. But one of the things you talked about were employers who we hear insisting that schools aren't producing graduates with the kinds of employability or soft skills that they need. Sarek recently conducted a survey of 500 employers in Canada, and this issue of lack of soft skills came up, and employers were talking about things like communication skills, a positive attitude, a strong work ethic that they were lacking. How do you interpret this? What do you make of what's going on, Phil?
Well, I think in a lot of ways the employers are right. I mean, they keep saying that students are not coming out of the system with, you know, the soft skills, the character, the attitudes, the habits, the communication skills, teamwork, and so on that you're mentioning. And, you know, in some ways, you know, that, you know, teamwork skills, you know, has been thought of as cheating in schools, where very often it's an independent approach and don't let anybody else see what you're doing because they might steal your marks or whatever. So we have to break that down. But the environment in a school where everything's lined up in straight lines and the bells ring at the same time and so on is such a different environment from a work environment or even community-based environment that it's not going to be possible for students to learn all of the skills that they need in that structured environment. So I really believe that employers are going to have to step up to the plate. If they don't think they're getting what they need, they're going to have to help in the process of preparing young people and not so young people. I mean, employees at any age. Canadian employers are not good comparatively internationally in terms of committing to employee training and development and really trying to increase the productivity by really investing and believing in their people as their number one resource. But if you go back to that notion of creating work-based, project-based, real-world learning experiences for students at all levels, and that could include job shadowing, internships, co-op placements, take our kids to work, a number of relationships where employers could step up and become more active in creating an opportunity for students and teachers to get out of the school environment and be engaged in the real world, you know, that's what they call it, environment beyond the school, and see what communication skills and teamwork look like in that context, and how innovation and constant learning, a thirst for learning, is really necessary for people to do well in the working world, and for employers, and for, you know, for our economy to prosper and so on. So it's going to take not finger pointing between employers and educators, but much, much more rolling up the sleeves together and collaboration, not stepping on each other's toes, but helping develop these soft skills and providing the experience that young people are going to need to make good choices vis-a-vis educational pathways, but also career and employment possibilities down the road.
If we can, let's take a look forward at the demographic situation that Canada is going to be facing. You write about how we have a large number of baby boomers who are retiring. You mentioned the smaller cohort of millennials, so of young people who are going to be entering the workforce. We know that current immigration levels in Canada are not going to allow us to meet labor market demands. And another aspect of this is, of course, that we're not fully tapping the potential of Canada's growing Aboriginal youth population. So how do you see these demographic trends shaping the country's economic challenges moving forward?
Well, they're redefining the world that we live in, for sure. Given the fact that we have a shrinking youth cohort, as you were saying, and we're going to be losing the wisest, most experienced members of our workforce and our society from the active labor force, anyway, as the boomers eventually retire, and a lot of young people think they're not retiring soon enough, but a lot of boomers are a lot healthier than they used to be at 50, 60, 70 and want to continue to make a contribution. And frankly, our country needs them to, and our employers need them to. But what we cannot afford, just simply cannot afford, is to have a youth cohort which goes through the entire 12 years of the K-12 system and possibly the post-secondary system and comes out the other end unsure about what to do next, but deep in debt and unable to really become engaged fully in the economy. So we have to do a better job with all young people, but we're going to have to do a much better job of making sure that Aboriginal youth in Canada, our best hope for as the only really growing youth cohort, really, you know, start to imagine futures that really make sense for them and make their dreams come true and connect their talent to all of the opportunities that are out there across Canada. We have to do a much better job with disabled Canadians. We still have to level the playing field for women. We have to do a much better job with socioeconomically challenged groups who may not have the role models that others have or the support systems as they explore their life and career possibilities. So we're just going to have to, you know, take our human resource as our number one priority and really do a little bit of seismic shifting with our education system so that we are really all youth, Aboriginal youth, disabled youth, any youth. And I keep coming back to youth because it's the only place we have a captive audience for at least 12 years or more. We just have to prepare them. And they are actually going to be, you know, carrying the baton at some point down the road, and they need to be doing it with good lives and good careers and fully engaged and paying their taxes and raising good families because they are literally our future. But yes, there is a huge skills mismatch because we haven't been doing a good enough job. We don't have enough. We actually do have enough people as long as we don't waste people, and that's unemployed and underemployed youth. That's Aboriginal youth who just have no way of connecting to real opportunities out there, and so many other situations. But we're never going to be able to bring in enough immigrants. In fact, the country wouldn't tolerate the levels of immigration that we might want to bring in. And frankly, why would we be bringing in talent from around the world when we've got kids dropping out of school, disabled, you know, Canadians not connecting, and so on. So we've just got to make our people and their talents and connecting them to opportunities in Canada our highest priority.
Phil, you obviously speak very passionately about the real social and economic costs that poor career development has, not only for students, but for all Canadians. And in your chapter in the textbook, you have a solution that you propose. There's something that you call the 1% difference. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. For the detail, I would encourage our listeners to read the chapter. But just very quickly, you know, lost productivity is huge. So if we've got only, you know, less than a third of the population really in jobs that they really like and are fully engaged with, you know, what would happen if we could get 1% more of our population into jobs where their skills and talents and aspirations fit, where they like their employers, where they look forward to going to work in the day, and increase the productivity by 1 in 100 people being more connected, rather than those 28 out of 100 who are now really fully connected, and so on. What if we could, and what impact would that have on the productivity of our employers and our gross domestic product by just increasing by 1% productivity by getting 1 out of 100 more people in good jobs? What if we could reduce healthcare costs by 1% by getting 1 out of 100 more people into jobs that they love, feeling less stressed out, less burned out at the end of the day, less needing to hit the bottle or hit some other substance to make the world go away, or go into a coma in front of the TV at the end of the day to recharge their batteries to do it all over again the next day? What if we could get 1 out of 100 people who are now in our prisons or the correctional system one way or another to actually dream a dream that makes sense for them in terms of career opportunities and make the connection so that they actually end up in jobs that they like, gainfully employed, making a contribution to society rather than being carried by society? What if we could reduce social assistance and welfare by 1 out of 100 people in the system, 1%? If we just did those things, that difference alone, given current stats in Canada, would add up to a $17 billion a year annual windfall for the governments of Canada and communities across Canada. Just that 1% would change the landscape of prosperity in communities across the whole country. Imagine if we could get 2% or 5%. That would tip the balance in terms of our international competitiveness and prosperity. So helping a few more people find their pathway to career trajectories and lives that are satisfying could make a huge economic difference, not to mention the human difference that would make.
So this 1 in 100 challenge goes out to educators, to employers, to governments. Truly everyone has a role to play.
To parents, to everyone. Yep. And it's to all of our benefit. If we get half of a percentage, we're all way better off.
So part of the solution to this challenge of connecting career development with economic development is getting a sense of how jobs are changing. In order to address these workforce skills gaps, we need to know what are the skills that are going to be in demand. But 10 years ago, if you take a job like app developer, it didn't exist. So how can we know what the jobs of the future are going to be?
We can't. You know, none of us really, that's crystal ball gazing. But the biggest problem right now is most young people and most adults who would love to find good careers don't even really know what the good jobs are today, let alone what the jobs will be tomorrow. Now, we can certainly, none of us, I don't think, believe that technological innovation is going to slow down anytime soon. We've seen the impact of the internet, as you talk about app developer and whatever. And I think we can all logically predict that technology will probably accelerate, and we've probably all got some ideas around where it might be going. But I really believe, and we can try and do projections and say, you know, there'll be, you know, 15% more people needed in this sector, you know, by the year 2022 or, you know, whatever, which really doesn't mean a lot to anybody. Or we can connect them to what I call living labor market information. And I think that comes right back to that issue of we have to connect all young people and adults who are trying to find their way to real world work-based learning opportunities. So if all students from, I mean, gosh, you know, we take kindergarten students to visit the museum and to visit, you know, the fire hall and to visit, you know, city hall and whatever it might be, to give them a sense of what that world is out there. And then at some point we close the door on the school and we say focus on the blackboard or focus on the smart board or whatever they're focusing on now. And somehow it will all make sense and you'll fall into the right thing. I really do believe that all students need to be encouraged to be dreaming, to be learning constantly about the world beyond the school. I mean, we focus a lot on history, but we have to focus on the future. And the future is just today, a little farther out. So we need to be connecting students with dreams to learning opportunities, whether it's connected to math, science, career, whatever it might be, with employers in their community. This could be public sector employers, for-profit employers, community-based organizations, whatever, so that they're actually seeing what's happening now, and they can have the conversation with the person in the plant or the person in the whatever it might be, the work environment. What do you think the future holds? What are you expecting in the next 5 years in your industry, in your sector, with this occupation? What technology is going to change what? And then we're introducing humans with dreams to humans who know right up to date what's happening today. And then we can start to make some informed decisions based on what I call living labor market information, connecting people, whether they're students in school or adults trying to figure their next, you know, the next fork in the road in terms of career with reality, today's reality, with the people who are best positioned to have a sense of what tomorrow might bring.
So that leads me to my final question for you, Phil. If we talk about the people that are working with students, that are working with adults in helping them navigate these career realities, that's our career development professionals. So we know that the industrial age career choice model, where people were making that point in time occupational choice, that's over, that's clear. And we have a new career management paradigm that's emerged. What role do career development professionals have in this new model?
They're the guides. They are the guides. I mean, we wouldn't dream of most of us going to a new, completely unfamiliar city and not doing some kind of a tour with a guide. We wouldn't go to Machu Picchu, you know, without somebody sort of helping us understand what we're seeing, or any archaeological, you know, site. Many people don't go fishing without a fishing guide, but somehow we think we can navigate the chaos of the working world without a guide, and it's really just too often for people, you know, the necessity to get another paycheck, wherever that's coming from, you know, to make ends meet today and for the next little while. But we have an amazing network of guides out there who understand the complexity of the working world, understand the complexity of individuals and their dreams and aspirations and their talents. And, you know, Canadians really just need to seek out guides and don't see that as failure. I know I often find, or had the impression, that going to the guidance office in school was admitting a problem or admitting a failure. You know, that's wrong think entirely. Seeking help is the smartest thing anybody can do, and we do have an amazing network of career professionals, fully trained, totally up-to-date career professionals, and I just encourage Canadians to avail themselves of the talent that's there, because it's just too important. We're basically authoring the rest of our lives every day, and if we're not making good decisions, we're wasting opportunities for a better life day by day.
Well, thank you very much, Phil, for sharing your thoughts on this vital link between career development and economic development. You can read more on this subject in Phil's chapter in the new CEREC textbook, Career Development Practice in Canada. Find out how to get your copy at www.cerec.ca. And be sure to join us for upcoming text talks with other leading contributors to the textbook. I'm Sharon Ferris for CEREC. Thank you all for listening.